When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.
Welcome back to Funtown, everybody. Hey, this is a bonus episode. You're not used to seeing us on Friday, but something special happened. A little while back, my buddy Stuart Huff, who's one of my favorite comedians, was passing through town. He called me up. He's like, hey, you want to get up for a minute? And I said, better yet, why don't you come to the house? Let's sit down and record a conversation, and we'll put it out on Funtown. I want you guys to know, if you're listening to this on Friday, and you're anywhere near Toledo, Ohio, I am at the Funny Bone tonight for one show, and then tomorrow on Saturday, August 29th, for two shows. You can only get tickets online, so just make it simple. Go to my website, toddcomedy.com, find the show on the calendar, and hit the ticket info button. It'll take you right to where you need to go. So, why is Stuart Huff one of my favorite comedians? He is a true storyteller in the most unique way possible. I mean, he's almost like watching a preacher on a pulpit, except he's super funny and he's not all caught up on God. So I want to get right to it. This was a pleasant surprise for me, and certainly a treat, and I hope you guys feel the same. Ladies and gentlemen, my buddy Stuart Huff. Stuart, thanks for coming by, brother.
Absolutely. I got a tour of the house, and this place is awesome.
It's deceiving, isn't it?
From street view. It's fantastic.
We hide a lot back here.
It's nice. I love it.
I couldn't wait for you to come on my own podcast now, right? Mm-hmm. So I've spent this time working for other people now since we used to hang out. And now I'm on my own, so I get to talk to whoever I want. And of all the comedians I know, you are by far the most interesting. I mean, I consider you a friend, all this, but not only do I love watching your show as much as I do anyone else's, to talk to you just to shoot the shit is always gratifying for me, because you have this mind, like, I don't know, in your shows, I've seen it described before, and how do you feel about this description? A lot of people are like, he's like a secular preacher mixed with this comedic genius and all these things. Like, how do you feel when you see those reviews like that?
I've had a couple people come up and say it's like going to church, but without the religion.
Yeah.
You know?
It is.
And I consider that a compliment.
It's
a
huge compliment.
I like the feeling of, I don't hit it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't bullseye it every night by far. I mean, that's the problem with what I do, or what I'm trying to do.
Right.
Is I miss the target. You know what I mean?
It's like, because you're working it out, or?
No, I think, like this. If you've got, let's say you've got a bunch of jokes and they're good.
Right.
You know, and they're funny and they're tight and they work 80% of the time, and boom, 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 you hit the jokes, then you're going to, it's like a high level of success.
Uh-huh.
You're going to hit.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
But if you're trying to, you know, you're trying to get into like that Southern preacher kind of without religion philosophizing and trying to make a point underneath the jokes, and then you're going to miss.
I get it. Yeah, it's going to bring your batting average down.
Yes,
but you're going – also, I will argue you're going to be a power hitter. So a big home run hitter has a lower batting average.
Yeah.
But when he connects, I mean, it goes out of the park.
You're right. Yeah. So. And that's the way – I didn't plan that, but that's the way I feel now.
Yeah.
It's like I think Bill Maher – so I didn't see Bill Maher say this, but someone told me he did that – that most comics are like short passers. Like they're going to hit the out route, you know, pick up 5 yards, six yards, and down the, and they're going to march down the field, just little, you know, dunks and dings here and there, a little by. But he likes those quarterbacks that just go for the bomb.
Oh, yeah. Brett Favre. Just freaking, hey, you might intercept this, but if you don't, it's a touchdown.
Right. And it's going to be dramatic and amazing.
Yeah.
I like that kind of performing, I like that kind of show. And so I think I just, over the years, I just started. Without really thinking about it, kind of going in that direction.
Right.
And then a decade later, that's what you are.
Oh, absolutely.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, I didn't plan it, but, and when I miss, it's bad.
Well, it's such a grand presentation. It's such a grand idea every time. And it's hard to, some people come to a comedy show not even knowing why they're coming to the comedy show, right?
Yeah.
So when you get an audience like when we came to see you many times, a lot of times people know what they're coming into. Mm-hmm. And when they're like – they know Stuart Huff and they know what he's going to bring, there's nothing like it because they can't get that experience anywhere else, to be honest. Hmm.
Well, that's nice.
With comedy, I would say.
Yeah. That's nice of you to say. I mean, I feel – the way I feel, Todd, is just frustrated. I mean, every day of my life, I just feel frustrated. And I don't know what – you know, should I say this? Should I not? I don't know. I don't know if I'm right. I don't know if I'm wrong. It's just a total frustration. But then occasionally when that bomb hits, you know, and I connect
– yes.
Then I'm like, yes, that what I did tonight is correct.
Right.
And it felt right. And, you know, and everything clicked.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then I'm chasing that high.
Right.
Again, instead of like, and I get jealous of people that are just like, they have, you know, they have these jokes and these jokes work and they do them and boom, boom, boom. And then I go up and try the long bomb and it's totally intercepted.
Well, you know? Well, I'll say this as someone who's on that other side that you just described, you know, I'm vanilla. I get frustrated because I realize my success rate is high. My batting average is high.
Yeah.
But I'm not changing people's opinions. I'm not offering some, you know, grand message that I'm there to deliver. And to me, that gets frustrating because I have a side of me that's why I have the True Crime podcast and these other things I'm into. Just because I have this other side of my brain that really wants to dive deep into subject matter.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm scared. It's why you're more brave than I am is what the difference is in my mind because I'm scared of those misses, of striking out.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah, I'm scared too. I just do it.
Yeah.
It scares me to death.
I love it. And here's in my brain, you potentially – are probably the greatest documentary filmmaker potentially that is not a documentary filmmaker. You know what I mean? Because when I've listened to your podcast, I've listened to are you, and you're not doing that currently, or are you on a hiatus? You do seasonally.
We do seasonally. So I go and record like we'll do 30 episodes in 7 days.
Yes, and it is called. Remind me,
Stuart Huff's Obsessive Curiosity.
Yes.
And we got to get you on.
Yeah, I would love to.
Yeah.
I would love
to. Because you would love it. Because we go down to Frankfort, right, Kentucky.
Right.
And we usually rent a place, rent a house, an Airbnb, and just it's just comedians just crash. And literally, you just sleep until you get up. And then we all go and get some breakfast, get some lunch. And then we hit the studio.
That's amazing.
And we just record one, take a little break, get a bite to eat something, and then record another one and another one and another one. And then we go, okay, it's got to be dinner time. Who's ready for dinner? And then we just go and we take over a 10-table play and we just eat like crazy.
I mean,
it's really for comics, it's like it's just a week of total fun. You're in a room arguing, laughing, talking, telling stories.
I can't imagine anything better.
Well, next season, we got
to
get you down.
Yeah, please, please. I would love to. I love Frankfurt, first of all. Love Lexington. Love that whole region. And love what you do. So I would be honored to do that for sure. Now, when I first met you on an old podcast we used to do out of Morty's Comedy Joints.
I remember
you came on. And I didn't know that you had this thing where – And you are the road dog of road dogs, in my opinion. You've played everywhere. You've lived the life for how many years now?
I'm bad with numbers, but it's somewhere around 25.
Yeah, 25 years. Like, I mean, that's a whole career for people. And I know there's boredom on the road. And this is the first time in my life I've been able to be a full-time comedian. Mm-hmm. And when I decided to do so, I got 8 weeks of it. And then, emergency brake, got pulled by God.
Right.
And now, here we are.
Right, here we are.
But I loved how to keep things interesting, because you do have this curious mind and you love love to study things about history and learn constantly about things. You would go to these little, like, shops and flea markets and things and look for just weird items that had some kind of historical significance.
Mm-hmm.
And then you study what they were about and where they came from.
I think it's curiosity, Todd. That's got to be what it is.
Yeah.
Plus, I think just aesthetically.
Yeah.
I just like, if I go to Target and buy something I need, right? I don't really care if it breaks.
Right.
You know, it's whatever.
Right.
But you break one of my possum asses, then I'm upset. I feel a loss.
Now, is this literally a possum ass?
Yeah, I got a couple taxidermy possum asses. You know, I got a coyote ass, and you know what I mean. Just so I have over 25 years, I just have this fairly large collection of junk. All of it, none of it is really themed. It's not like I collect beer mugs.
Right.
It's not like that. It's like I got a beer mug, and next to it is some weird Indian head carving that I found that I just liked. And next to that is some warthog tusk. It's just craziness. But and I literally walk to a junk shop and just kind of think and you relax a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And just walk around and no one really talks to you, and you know I'm alone, and I'm just thinking about how bad last night was, or you know how good it was,
right,
or what I did right on stage and what I did wrong, and you know this idea is not working. Why doesn't anybody else see the funny in this? You know, and I'm thinking all those thoughts, and then I'll see something and go, holy crap, what is that? All of a sudden I'm interested now. Yeah. I don't know what this is, but it's cool looking. You know, and I've got items I still don't know what they are. So no clue.
When you see it and it sticks out and you're like, I got to have that. I don't know why, but I got to have it.
Yeah.
Is that where the journey begins? Now do you just start trying to find as much research on the thing?
The first thing I do is look at the price tag. That's number one. I look at the price tag and I either go, oh, yeah, you're coming home with me. Or I'm like, these assholes, they want so much money for this crap. That, you know,
right.
So if it's affordable, then, you know, then I get it. And I'll give you one example. Like I found this postcard and I'm not a postcard person, but I have a habit of if you're a junker and you don't know that, this is a good tip that someone else told me. But years ago, you see it like a roll top desk, you know, open the drawers.
Oh,
what's in there? You know, you see any cabinet, open the doors, open, dig, because stuff is in there 99% of the time that no one else that's walked through this store has been through.
Wow.
I mean, I have found amazing stuff in desk drawers buried, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, I open a desk drawer and there's a bunch of postcards in there and I just kind of pull them out and I'm flipping through and I find one that it's what they call a real photo postcard, which is a term I learned after I bought this and started doing research. They used to take a picture, like they take a picture of Todd,
right?
Here's you on stage, and then they put it on a postcard, and then on the back they've got, you know, where you put the stamp or whatever, and then they'd sell that. So it's a real photo.
Right.
Okay, so it's a picture of some people in a classroom. It's black and white picture, right? And at the top, the only words on the front say Communist Training School.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I know. And I was like, what?
What is going on
Communist,
with this thing?
Yeah, what is this?
Yeah.
Communist Training School. And then I start looking closer at the picture, and that's Martin Luther King. He's in there. He's very young, Martin Luther King, and it's just a bunch of people, black and white, in a classroom. And I thought I recognized a couple other faces. Like, I don't know, but I think that's that John Lewis guy, that congressman. That I think that's him. And you know, so I'm like, how much? It's a quarter. I'm buying this.
Yeah.
So
it's
then
a quarter.
Yeah, it's a quarter. So then I go back and I type in communist training school, Martin Luther King, into Google, and it pops up.
Holy shit.
So then I start learning all about this. Never heard about any of this. So I'll give you a short history. So, like, there was this dude, they called him the Radical Hillbilly. What a great title.
That is a great title.
Radical. They called him the Radical Hillbilly. His name was Miles Horton. And he was a white dude, and he just was, he born in Appalachia, poorest part of the country.
Right.
Almost everybody that he knew, including his family, busted their ass in the coal mines, got no money for it, you know. So he grew up thinking, we got to change this.
Yeah.
How do you change this? So he ends up going to some different, you know, smart people trying to learn how you change cultures. How do you change the situation of a life, you know? So he ends up opening a school called the Highlander Folk School that is all about that. Every adult, no kids in this school. It's all adults. You all are coal miners. Come to school. And all he did was listen to your stories. Todd, tell me the story that you told me about what happened last week in the mine. And then you tell the story about how, you know, you got your leg cut open and you had to be taken to the hospital and you know, you're making $1.50 a week or whatever it is, can't feed your kids, you don't feel like a man, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And someone else in the class goes, hey, wait a minute, that happened to me. And then all of a sudden everybody in the class realizes we're all in the same boat.
Holy shit.
All of us have the same experiences.
Uh-huh.
Why do I hate that guy when we're the same?
This is a genius,
yes,
like, cultural sensitivity training seminar.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Okay.
So he brings everybody in the town together so they stop hating each other and they realize they're all in the same boat. No point in hating each other. So if they all get together and demand better working conditions, demand some kind of health insurance, demand some kind of wage where you can feed your family, then they have power.
Wow.
Individually hating each other, you don't have any power.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So this dude was effective. It actually worked in the South. So then some government official paid someone to go into this school undercover, take a picture. And then they wrote communist training school on it.
Jesus.
To try to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Propaganda.
To try to propagandize the thing. And the government did shut his school down three times. They shut it. State of Tennessee shut it down. Uh-huh. It's still open.
Yeah.
They're still out there fighting.
Jesus.
I didn't know any of this.
Yeah.
I opened a drawer in a junk shop and went, what in the hell is this? You know what I mean?
That started the everything. So many times that I'll just sit down right here where I'm sitting right now in bedroom number 4 and I get on my iMac and I just start scrolling. All right, what documentary can I watch that I can learn something I didn't know about before? What, you know, and I just read and I scroll through, look for topics for my true crime podcast or whatever. But it's so hard to get to know where to start, right? You're just blindly surfing the internet.
Yeah.
You're finding something that immediately piqued your interest visually, and then working backward to the story. And that's the most beautiful thing I've ever heard of. That's why
I didn't plan it.
Yeah.
You know, it just happened.
Yeah. But then that kind of became a thing. Like, let's just walk out and see what grabs me in these things. And then if it's interesting enough, I'll see what I can learn about it.
Yeah.
And then you end up by proxy ended up learning of like a significant event in history that people need to know about.
Yeah.
And don't.
I'm thinking about writing a play about him. I'm trying to get together. I don't know. But yeah, we need to know about this because that is how you change.
Yeah.
Right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anything you're involved in that you feel like you've been treated bad, you're not treated fairly, whatever it is, you know what I mean? You need numbers. You need people on your side. You need a group to come together. You know? Yeah. And I learned about that totally the same way as you. You're just like, well, let me see documented. Well, I don't know what that is. You know what I mean? And you're not – once you get to the point where you're like – well, that doesn't, you know, that's stupid, that's dumb, that's, right. Then you're in the wrong mindset.
Absolutely.
That's wrong mindset.
Absolutely.
You know, it's okay to say, I don't particularly like that, or I'm not that interested, that's fine. But once you start judging everything in the world, you know, mm-hmm. wrong mindset to learn. It, to me, it's like, yeah, that doesn't really pique my interest. That, oh, what is that?
Yes. Because to me, that's a very fascinating period in history where I can't remember the senator's name. You might know, but there was one particular senator that waged a war on communism back in that era. Uh-huh. And if he tagged you as a communist, your life was over.
Yeah.
Your career was up. If you were a Hollywood director, not anymore.
Yeah. The Red Scare. Yeah.
And the fact that one person had that much power mm-hmm. is mind blowing.
Yeah. And scary.
And very scary.
Yeah.
And there were quashing so many like benevolent things like this, where they're just trying to bring people together and mm-hmm. make everybody's lives better and create an environment where people could coexist peacefully. Mm-hmm. And not only that, like affect change in their own lives.
Yeah.
And it was getting quashed by this one guy. That communist.
Communist.
You in there meeting together? What? We got blacks, white, you got Hispanics in there? Communist.
Yeah. Yeah. And they knew at the time that you put that tag on it, mm-hmm. communist, and a large percentage of the country would just automatically hate it.
Yes.
They wouldn't look into it.
No.
They wouldn't research. They wouldn't say, well, let me find out. Unfortunately, a large portion of our country, I don't know about other countries because I don't live in them,
right.
but large portion of this country, that's all you need
mm-hmm.
is you just say, well, this is illegal immigrants, or this is the cops, or this is the religion, or whatever you want to, whatever word you want to take an entire person's, an entire group of people's thinking and theories and reduce it all the way down to a bumper sticker. Mm-hmm. And then someone else hates it because of those words.
Yep.
Oh, that's so depressing.
It's power. And unfortunately, in today's world, almost every Joanne citizen has mm-hmm. that power, because if you say one thing, whether it's substantiated or not with evidence, say it on social media, and somebody runs with it, it could end everything for you or me. You know, or
absolutely,
anybody. So it's not, in some ways, not everything has changed. You know what I mean? Unfortunately, it's just spread out more to where everybody has that power. Basically,
right? It's no longer one senator.
Yeah,
it's your neighbor.
Uh huh.
You know what I mean? And your boss, and that's scary. You know, and it's. I don't think it's good. I'm not happy about the.
It's not good at all. No. Now, here's another period of history that I'm particularly interested in. It's the 70s reign of the CIA, where they were really kind of, you know, granted just absolute power to run autonomously. Yeah. And in theory, I guess it was, well, if you guys know what's best for the world, so you just run with it. We don't want to know what you're doing. You know,
that's
like what our president and cabinet members were saying in Congress. So they were just running freely and doing all these horrible things in what they're considering the best interest of our country to protect us from the world. So, that whole period where they were grabbing up police officers and drug smugglers and all these people in facilitating the trafficking of weapons to South America in exchange for, you know, turning a blind eye or helping drug shipments get through okay here mm-hmm. and just all these crazy things. So what I was exploring one day, you know, kind of that genre in documentaries and things I could find on the internet, and I came across this documentary called Third Eye Spies. Have you ever heard of this?
Never heard of it.
You need to watch this.
Okay.
It will blow your mind.
Third Eye Spies.
Yes.
I'm writing it down.
It's all about, and it began during the Vietnam War, I believe.
Okay.
And it was a couple scientists at the, is it San Francisco University? But anyway, they ended up getting funded by the CIA. For this experimental project where they had been hearing rumors and getting some intelligence information in that the Russians, the Soviets at that time, were using people with psychic abilities in the spy world.
Yeah.
And so they were like, well, we should check into that. We don't want to fall behind on the, you know, the psychic spy thing. So they funded these two guys, these two professors that were kind of into that world. and to start this program, and they started recruiting people, and they were just, you know, that scene in Ghostbusters where Bill Murray's like trying people out and he's got the electrodes hooked to their heads and like, what's on the other side of this card? They were really doing shit like this.
Right.
And then they ended up coming across a group or a segment of the psychic population. They're called remote viewers.
Yes.
Are you familiar with that?
Yeah.
I guess you can give them a latitude and longitude anywhere in the world, and they can see what's there from their chair.
That's what they claim. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they're claiming.
Yeah.
So they end up, there's some crazies mixed in here, and then all of a sudden it leads to one particular character, and his name is Joseph McMonagall. And he's fighting the war in Vietnam. He's a combat veteran. He's over there fighting the war. And there were like, he was one of seven people that were tagged as always knowing the right path to walk. Like sometimes they would say, "Ooh, we shouldn't go there. I have a bad feeling about this route right here. We shouldn't do it. There might be landmines there." And there would be. So they get this reputation of, "Oh, you want Joseph McMonagall on point to, if you can, because he's lucky as fuck or whatever."
Yeah.
And so they bring them in. They're soldiers, and they start running them through the testing. And Joseph was the most talented, I guess, of them all. So they were like, "All right, he has the raw talent, or the raw ability. We need to learn how to hone it." And he became a remote viewer for them. Now, there was at one point, and this is, of course, just the story in the documentary, when they first started to hang their hat on remote viewing, they had two different individuals in there in two different rooms and two different interviewers. And at one point, the one guy running the program runs to someone in the office and says, "Hey, give me a latitude and longitude anywhere in the world, And the guy gives him one. And it's to where he had just built a hunting cabin. And so he's like, "Oh, I'll know if they're, what they're describing is real or not, because that's my property." So they go in, they give it to each of them individually in separate rooms. And then they both come back with the same description of what is there, which is this weird, like, hidden military type fortress almost, like a secret military base, and there were satellite dishes on the roof. And then they get really specific, like describing what the rooms look like as you walk in the front door. And then they each walk to this one office where there's a file cabinet full of folders that are labeled with billiard terms, like corner pocket or nine ball and all these things. So the interviewers come out and they compare notes, and they're like, "What'd your person have?" He's like, "I don't know. It's weird. I think he's making it up, but here's what he's describing." And I guess the other guy gets white, and he's like, "This is exactly what my guy's describing." And a lot of the billiard terms on the labels and the folders are the same. So they go to the guy that gave them the original Latin long, and they're like, "Hey, what's this place that you gave us?" And he's like, "Oh, it's my hunting cabin, it's just a cute little cabin, front porch, covered front porch, it's pretty awesome." And they're like, "Well, this is what both these guys are saying is there." So he's like, "Well, I didn't build that, so that's not right." So they get curious and they do aerial surveillance over the area, and they start broadening their search. Well, near that area, turns out there's a secret military installation that we're running. And the reason they had all these giant satellite dishes and stuff is that it's designed to intercept satellite communications and transmissions from the Soviets. And every operation they would run, they would use billiard terms to name the operation. So then they're like, "Well, this is crazy. Maybe this is a real thing." And then they come across this Joseph McMonagall, who's not a crazy person. He's actually a soldier in Vietnam, and he's more talented than all of them. And he ends up working a 20-year storied career for the CIA as a remote viewer in Army intelligence. And even at the end, he's on there. They're talking to him. I've communicated with him since. I'm supposed to interview him at some point, and I'm fascinated too.
Yeah.
And he has his meritorious separation of duty thing, where basically when they read it and they show it, basically says he was a spy with psychic abilities without saying it. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
And I'm like, "Well, how much is this is real? How much is not? I'm dying to know."
Absolutely.
But this program was funded for 20 years, dude.
Mm-hmm.
20 years.
Crazy. That kind of stuff is like, what's the word? I don't even know if I can think of a word that really explains it. It's beyond fascinating to me. You know, there's more than just fascination there.
Right.
It's all of those big words combined.
Yes.
It's intriguing, fascinating, all of that stuff. And like documentaries, like little, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand. Here's what I don't understand. At least half of the crap
right.
that is presented to us
yeah.
as entertainment, movies, yeah. the crap's on television. I'm sitting there and I'm watching it and I'm thinking, I know 9 stories right off the top of my head that are more fascinating than this crap.
Yes. Yes.
Why did you make a movie about this?
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
When there's hundreds and hundreds of stories like the one I just told, the one you just told.
Yes.
That would, if you have any ounce of curiosity in your body, will grip you.
Absolutely.
Right?
And then I come to find out later, have you ever seen The Men Who Stare at Goats with George Clooney?
Yes, yes, yes.
Loosely based on the idea of that. You know, obviously, it takes its own path. It's fictional or whatever.
But if I remember that movie, like the story you just told me is 10 times more fascinating than
that movie. I rather would really know the real story.
Right. I mean, that movie was almost mocking, kind of. It was kind of joking.
Yes.
Which there's nothing wrong with taking a shot at this because it is funny, and there's nothing wrong with that, but they needed more facts.
Absolutely. And like whether or not the remote viewing is real or it was really working, I want to know what operations were ran based on the information the remote viewers were giving them.
Yeah.
Like what shit did we blow up? What, you know, what countries did we help revolt, you know, because of what these people were reporting?
Right, right. What were the consequences of this? Because you know there were some.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You ran the program for 20 years. You had to be acting, not just, you know, researching the entire time.
And I don't want to get all crazy citizens' rights kind of stuff, but, you know, this is taxpayers' money we're using.
Yes.
So let's make a damn good movie.
Right.
Come on. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Tell me the truth.
Yes.
I mean, it's already done and over, right? It's like when you – I just recently – because I'm working on a bit for a show, but I just recently started reading declassified FBI stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Mind-boggling.
Oh, I bet.
I mean, it's just – some of it's hilarious.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, the FBI spied on John Denver, for Christ's sakes.
Is that real? I always heard that. I didn't know
if it was – spied on John Denver.
Oh, my God.
It's an FBI declassified files that you could read the John Denver file.
Holy shit.
He was on the Muppets. What the hell?
Yeah. What do you think? Because he's kind of a hippie. You know,
apparently. I mean, he did an interview where he was against the war.
Oh, that's all it takes.
And all it takes.
Yeah.
Which I didn't know. I mean, I guess I could have guessed, but literally, if you were against the war, the FBI spied on you.
Yeah.
I mean, they spied on Iraq veterans against the war.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, these are soldiers that were veterans that were in Iraq war, and they just got home and were against it and formed a little group, right? Iraq veterans against the war, FBI spied on them.
Wow.
So then you ask yourself the question, well, is the FBI for the troops or for the war?
Right.
You know what I mean? Which one? Because, I mean, they're allowed to have their opinion.
Yeah.
They serve the country.
And who better to offer an opinion than somebody who was in it?
They were actually there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, you want my opinion on Tupperware or the lady that sold it for 40 years? I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, digging into that kind of stuff, the CIA, the CIA LSD.
Do
you know about all this?
Well, loosely. Amazing. I hope you know more than I do because I'm fascinated by it.
Well, it's just, I mean, on one level, just from a pure curiosity, right? So, then I can understand going, huh, we've got some money.
Yeah.
Let's find out about this remote viewing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anything. God, can you imagine if you and I had endless funds?
Oh, yeah.
Endless.
The things we would want to know more about.
I mean, it would take us 10 years just to get out of this neighborhood. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I want to know why the lady next door bought 2 of the same dog.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, what's that deal?
Right.
You know? Like, if you had endless funds, it would be a lifetime of nothing but pursuing curious thoughts, right?
Maybe so, that's the basis of it.
Maybe it is. I mean, I'll tell you this. I would be disappointed if there wasn't at least a handful of people in the CIA that weren't like, I'm really fascinated and curious about this remote viewing.
Yeah.
Do you think it's real? I don't know.
Right.
but I'd like to spend a couple mil.
Do you think it could help our country? I don't give a shit. Yeah, I have endless money to explore something I'm crazy interested about.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, from like a taxpayer point of view, that's horrible. That, right. You know, but from a curious human point of view, I don't blame them.
Yeah, I
Are
don't
you
either.
Kidding? Wow. I mean, LSD comes along. I mean, some dude in a lab, I think in Sweden, I think he was in. I can't remember where he was, but he just stumbled upon it, you know?
Uh-huh.
And next thing you know, it's kind of trickling out into some colleges to not kids, but like some, you know, researchers, and they're doing tests on this, and it's an odd new thing, and it's creating all these crazy images and blah, blah, blah. So then they started paying people $25. You got paid to go in and take LSD, and then they would observe you.
Oh.
They just watch you. Yeah. You know, so then it got to the point where the CIA started dosing people without their knowledge.
Mm.
Let's just put it in Todd's unsweetened tea over there.
Right. Right.
And they would, you know, so what are you going to, how are you going to act? And according to what you read, is what they were interested in is, could we give this to the enemy?
Yeah.
You know, and they thought initially it was going to be a truth serum.
That's what I loosely know about it, is that maybe it was going to be used as an interrogation tool. And then at one point they brought like their brightest minds all to one. Like it was supposed to be like a commune situation. Oh, we have a big seminar. Bring all the brain trust to this remote place. And then they dosed them all with LSD and started to see if they could get them to talk on certain things.
Yeah. And that's exactly right. And then at one point, I think it was in New York or Chicago, they just dosed a couple of people in the office, CIA. They dosed their own people.
Wow.
And one of them went out a window.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And then they claim that he, like a cover up story, maybe, am I correct on this? Like maybe like the Soviets killed the guy or something?
Yeah. I mean, it was.
Or it's way more likely he just went out of his mind and jumped through a window because he thought he was being chased by a dragon or something.
Probably. Yeah, right. And they settled with the family in like the 80s or something.
Oh, wow.
Or maybe it was even more recently. But yeah, I mean, this kind of stuff, just because it's secret.
Yes.
Right? Then it becomes like, you know, it's not like if you're researching the World's Fair.
Mm-hmm.
The history of the World's Fair, it's probably fascinating.
Right.
You might find some, you know, briberies going on and this and that, or, you know, some jostling for position or whatever.
Sure.
The CIA, FBI are secret organizations, you know. Mm-hmm. So everything that they've done, we don't know anything about.
Right.
Right. So then when you do find a nugget, it's a juicy nugget.
Yes.
You know, it's a lot of crap. Plus they have unlimited money to just and they screw up people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
Which,
that's the whole thing that really makes me want to keep studying it, is because the devastation, the fallout from all these things. So, all right. So your podcast network's based in Frankfort, Kentucky. Near that is Lexington.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with the Bluegrass Conspiracy?
I don't think so.
It's a book. I don't think there's been any documentaries done on it. I did an episode on my true crime podcast about it, where it's basically, here's a long story, very short. There was Lexington, Kentucky back in the day, like say in the 70s, was a real interesting place because it was a very effective melting pot for the elite.
And so, this is in the 70s?
Yes, because of the horses, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You got a lot of money.
All
there.
Rich people love horses.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're talking mafia, the heads of mafia families because of the betting aspect.
Sure,
of it. The Hollywood elite, just because it's cool to have horses and be around horses and to be around the best horses in the world.
Yeah.
And then you had the police in Lexington were always hired part-time. They made no money, but they made good money working part-time security for these big galas and things that these horse, I'll call them Big Horse, ran. And they're protecting and guarding properties or parties where, you know, maybe the most famous Hollywood actors and actresses are there, heads of mafia families, owners of casino chains, like the owners of Caesar's Palace and all these things are there. People from other countries, like Arab, you know, princes and whatnot are there. And
yeah,
it's just crazy, right? And it's just good old Charlene holds a, you know, a horse breeding place. And,
right.
and she's the
that's a good accent, by the way.
And she's the, you know, the queen of the gala. And
yeah.
so they live these incredible lives, these horse people then. And mm-hmm. cocaine starts to come into play because when sure. you got a bunch of rich people together, you know, here comes cocaine.
Yeah.
And then it became where they began to feel untouchable because in Lexington, they were so rich and powerful and everybody else was not. They were the opposite of that. Mm-hmm. So they became the patriarchs and they controlled all of Lexington. If you were a policeman, you worked for Big Horse. If yeah. you owned a pharmacy, you worked for Big Horse.
Yeah.
And you did whatever they did, wanted you to do. So in the consequences of it all is there was a little narcotics unit, the very first narcotics unit for the Lexington Police Department. They had undercover officers. And quickly they ran the security for these galas and whatnot and began to quickly notice that, hey, we have all this money and drugs just buzzing around us all the time, and they kind of can't do it without us. So we're more important than we're giving credit for. So one particular undercover officer starts his own drug network, and it becomes the largest, ends up becoming the largest weapons and drug trafficking organization in the U.S. history.
Wow.
Just some Lexington undercover cop.
I didn't know about any of this.
Yes, it's incredible. You need to read about it. And he ends up, you know, working for the cartel. There's a famous story. The story is most famous for this one particular event, and it's the end of the guy's life. And it opens the story up in the book with this, is a man in a suburb in Lexington, or maybe it wasn't Lexington. It wasn't Lexington, but somewhere else. Maybe in Georgia, I think, maybe.
Huh.
Walks out of his front door in the morning to go get the paper, and there is a man dead in his driveway with a parachute. And a bag full of kilos of cocaine and money.
Now, wait a minute. I've heard of this part
right?
of it.
Yes.
This part I've heard of.
Yes. That's like a lot of people have only heard that part.
The,
right?
Okay.
Yes.
So that's the and most popular
part. I think
he's in
Georgia part. Where you're
yeah, I think he was. Yeah.
And they end up finding out who he is. He's this mm-hmm. former narcotics detective from Lexington, Kentucky. And now they're like, former narcotics detective and bag of coke and large amounts of cash and all these weird weapons. And he's in a parachute. What in the fuck is going on?
Right.
Well, turned out it was his last drug run. He flew the plane himself, and whatever happened, happened. And they ended up right. finding all these bundles of bags of cocaine in the woods, and bears were dying.
Yes.
Because bears were eating the cocaine.
I remember,
that's,
yeah.
that's the legend there in Georgia.
That's the part I
yeah,
know about.
Right.
I didn't know about all that
oh,
other
yeah.
stuff.
I mean, they got tied in with the biggest cartel lawyers that were based here in the U.S., and they end, that was their demise because the DEA was watching them. They get tied into it. And long story short, the judge that was that had the case on the lawyers that was going to take down everybody else, Woody Harrelson's dad assassinates him. So that's the guy that Woody Harrelson's dad's in prison for assassinating.
God, that's crazy.
Right? What a crazy story out of
that's
Lexington,
crazy.
Kentucky. And all
yeah.
probably – because the CIA got involved.
Yeah.
Because they found players that had all these weird CIA, like, secret documents and things when this all came crashing down. And they had always claimed that they were cooperating with the CIA. And now that we know what we know, probably truthful, because how mm-hmm. else could you successfully make so many drug-running operations and never get caught?
Mm-hmm.
And it just grew by leaps and bounds, and it just got out of control.
I'm not a conspiracy theory kind of guy. I don't mm-hmm. lean towards that, but I'm a human behavior guy.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So my theory is, my guess is, there's a small percentage of humans, small, that actually has courage of their convictions.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You no, know what
correct.
I mean?
I would say, yeah.
Small.
Yeah.
And I don't give a damn whether you're a cop or whether you're a hippie,
right.
or whether, I don't care what you are.
Uh-huh.
You take any group of humans, and there's a very small slither of people that would actually turn down money, power, drugs, fame, because they disagree with
yeah.
that. Do you
yeah.
know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So you anywhere you go, you have this situation where if you have you put these things, you put power, money, and fame, or any two in any order of those
yes.
together, and you're going to have problems and
big
interesting
problems.
History.
Yes,
you
because
know?
People are so corruptible.
So
right?
corruptible.
We always want bigger and better.
Yes.
And when posed with a real opportunity to get that,
yep,
you, like you said, 90% of the population yep. are going to
And you could go for you it. Could take someone that has publicly been against this and against that and against this, and we need to be moral and good human and blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah. And as soon as they're offered a meal, boom, they're gone.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
It's very few humans would turn down that. So it becomes sadly fascinating. You know what
it
I mean?
It is. It is. And in going back to earlier, you're like just surfing through these junk shops.
Yeah.
So we can learn so much. Obviously, this is why museums exist and documentaries and all these things. We can learn so much about our nation's history from the artifacts of influential and famous people. Mm-hmm. But how better to understand where we came from and why we are where we are now than the artifacts of the common person?
Yes.
Right? That's why I'm always fascinated yeah. about what you were interested in.
You want me to give you another one?
Yes, please.
All right. And this is you right now, there's a lot of people, right, that are frustrated, upset, angry because there's a bunch of people that claim the Democrats created COVID to win the election.
Yes.
And
yes.
You know what I mean? All that. And by the way, if you believe the Democrats created COVID to win the election, then you are giving the Democrats way more credit than they deserve. This party has never shown that much intelligence since the beginning. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If the Democrats actually came up with this idea that they're going to beat Trump by releasing a pandemic, and they had the foresight to start it in another country and then work its way around. If they did all that, then you should vote for them because they could probably build the wall that you
right.
want. You know what I mean? Democrats are not that smart. I'm
right.
sorry.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know, there's a big, you know, with COVID, with masks, with, you know, the climate deniers, mm-hmm. all this stuff going on, right? All right. This is one of my favorite stories. And I learned about this in a junk shop.
Okay, great.
I'm in a junk shop and I see old Life magazines, you know, uh-huh. and I don't know why. Just one of them, I start flipping through and I see this woman she's laying on a bed and there's a black and white photograph and she has an enormous bruise. I mean, she's got a big one. I mean, it looked like a bull hit her right in the ass. Uh-huh. I mean, she's got this huge bruise on her side. That was Ann Hodges. She got hit with a meteorite.
A meteorite
in Sylacauga, Alabama.
This is true. This is in Life magazine.
This is Life magazine.
Oh, my God.
This happened during the Cold War.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And I read the article and was just cracking up and was interested.
Uh-huh.
So the only vacation I've ever taken in my career, I blocked 2 weeks off of not doing comedy. And I went to Sylacauga and got a hotel room. And just went around, and I went to the library, and they have a little museum exhibit with the rock there and everything. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And I sat in the diner and would try to strike up conversations with people that I thought might, you know, older people, maybe they remember from, you know,
yes.
stories. And I talked to people. Oh, God, it's amazing. So here's what happened, all right? This woman, Ann Hodges, Cold War era, right?
Uh-huh.
She's asleep on her couch, Sylacauga, Alabama, middle of nowhere,
right.
tiny town. All of a sudden, damn meteorite comes through her roof. It busted her roof. It busted a hole in her roof, comes through, hits her radio, and bounces off that and still has enough power to leave a bruise that's bigger than a basketball.
Oh, my God.
Okay?
Yeah.
So then here's what's fascinating to me, Todd. The first thing that the town of Sylacauga did was they sent the rock to NASA and said, this is probably from the Russians. It's like we talked about with communism before.
Right.
Back then, if you put the word Russia on anything, that was the communism of the time.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
It's the Cold War.
Yeah, it's the Cold War. So they actually thought, and I read an interview where one man actually thought they probably had a little person in it driving it.
I love the imagination of stupid people because it's
beautiful?
Limitless. It's truly limitless. Yeah.
Yes, isn't it beautiful? As long as you don't live next to them, it's you know what I mean. It's beautiful. So most people, that's the word they used. Most people thought it was the Russians that had done this.
It's incredible.
Yeah. Anne thought God hit her with the rock. So she should keep it because they were trying to take it from her and send it to NASA, which they did, actually. Right. But she was mad because she said, God hit me with this rock. It's mine. You know. Now, here's where it gets really beautiful. Some people in town thought it was her fault that she had done it to herself. It's her own fault because the house she lived in was across the street from a drive-in movie theater called The Comet.
Oh, my God.
And they thought that because she lived across the street from The Comet, she got hit with a comet. And these are serious. So a meteorite hit a woman in the middle of Alabama, and three different theories from thinking. I mean, these are shoe-buying humans. You know what I mean? These are people you and I walk around with day in, day out. Right. These are people we hope don't hit us from behind in their cars, you know? People actually thought that Russia was going to try to spread communism by throwing rocks at Southern women. How in the hell? I mean, you're going to hit someone with a rock, go for the president or the VP, go for somebody. They hit Ann Hodges.
Right.
Who cares?
Who cares about Ann Hodges?
Yeah. Yeah. Ann thought that God hates her. But, and I do, I got to tell you, Todd, I love picturing God just going, you know what? I'm bored. Fuck Ann. You know what? She ain't done nothing. You know, just calling Gabriel, come over here. Don't you try to hit Ann in the muffin top with a rock. And, you know, and then some people actually thought in their brains, working apparently brains, that the names of businesses affect nature.
Oh, what, because of
the comet. Why would it matter?
Yeah.
So I learned about that story and laughed and had a great time. I learned about history. She was the first confirmed human ever hit by a meteorite. Ugh. There were other, you know, there's stories from 1410 or whatever. Sure. But we know she got hit, right?
Right.
But so I spent 2 weeks and researched that and learned all about it and laughed and had a good time. And then now, when I hear these theories about, you know, all this crap, I laugh. I think it's because I think we've always been this way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You're right.
People, friends of mine say this country's getting dumber. No, it's not.
Yeah.
It's not.
No, we're just getting louder.
We're
maybe.
Getting louder. Yeah. Very well put, Todd. Yeah. We've been dumb as hell for a long time.
Right, right.
So it's not like we were at the mountaintop of intellect and we plummeted. We ain't never been at the mountaintop. You know what I mean?
Oh, my God.
So
I am dying.
I mean, these kind of stories, like, you know, the Lexington story, right? And then something's going to come out where there's some politician involved in some drug ring and blah, blah, blah. And then people are going to start, oh, we're going to hell. Country's going to hell. No, we're not. This has been going on since the beginning.
And that's why it's important for people to learn about our history.
Yes.
And like you just gave an example about the most ordinary woman in existence,
mm-hmm.
you know, in our history. Like, they don't get any more ordinary than Anne.
Right.
And but it's a perfect illustration to compare it to what's going on right now. Yes.
Yeah.
No, we're no different.
No different. There's always going to be a chunk of us.
Yes.
That is, oh, no, it ain't. I tell you, it ain't. That Carl Sagan's full of shit. Full of shit. What does he know? I know in my gut there ain't no Mars.
Right.
You know what I mean? There's always going to be a chunk of that.
Yeah.
There's always going to be when you know that and you know some history, you've seen some documentaries, whatever, you know what I mean? Then all of a sudden, then what you're living through in your day-to-day life now is more livable.
Right.
You don't get as angry.
Yeah.
There's maybe a little grin with your frustration, you know, a little giggle with your anger because you realize that we've been through this time and time again.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think that's the only difference now. And I guess that's why I said louder.
That's
because
beautiful
now
that
I can
that.
See it pop up on Google, you know, or on my Instagram feed because somebody shared the story. Before, you had to stumble across this old Life magazine to find that.
Now, boom, here it is.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, right there.
You know? My God.
And you can read about the crazy.
Yes.
Right in front of your face. You know, it is louder. I like that term. I like the way you put that. It's It's louder, and it's 24 hours a day,
yep.
7 days a week. You know, it's no longer 30 minutes of Walter Cronkite in the evening.
Right.
Now it's 4 a.m., you know, yeah, popping absolutely. Weird shit at
yeah,
you.
Yeah, because we all work in shifts to consume now, right? Because it's right. 24 hours a day. And yeah. I love the fact that, you know, there's beauty to it.
There is
beauty to these stupid people.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And embracing it does help make you feel better about the world.
It does. It does. To me, it's more – it really – I don't know. Because I think, Todd, if I really honestly believed – that we're getting dumber and dumber and dumber, then I don't know. I'd go all Jeremiah Johnson. I'm ready right. for the woods now.
Yeah, absolutely. You know?
And I feel that way anyway. Life is frustrating.
Uh-huh.
And it helps just a touch to realize that this ain't new.
No.
Nothing's new.
No.
We've been through all this shit.
All of it, yeah.
You know? And people reacted the same damn way every freaking time.
From the cave drawings, even the hieroglyphics.
Yeah, like, I saw a cave drawing said "fuck Fauci." You know,
dude. Thanks so much for coming in to hang out with me.
Yeah, man, I love it. I love it.
Let's
it's
let
been
people
too long since I've seen you.
It has, and I love talking to you. I love watching your show. So let's tell people exactly where to find you, because I'm going to challenge them right now to go catch a Stuart Huff live performance, because it is such a unique experience in the world of comedy.
When I don't throw an interception.
Yeah. So they go to Stuart Huff.
I have a website. I'll tell you right off the top. I know you and I could talk forever.
Oh,
but
yeah, absolutely.
I think at some point you get to a certain age, maybe. Maybe it's age. Maybe it's exhaustion. I don't know what it is. But at some point you just go, you know what, I'm done.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's so much new crap. All the time. It's like, are you on MySpace? Are you on Facebook?
Yep.
Are you on Instagram? Are you TikTok? Are you tweet? At some point, a human being just goes, you know what? I'm done.
Yeah. It's right? too much.
It's too much. You know? So I don't have Instagram. Mm-hmm. I'm just done. Mm-hmm. Right. So I have a website, stuarthuff.com. You know, my CDs are on there. You can pick them up there. And my podcast is Stuart Huff's Obsessive Curiosities.
Yes.
You can listen to that. And, you know, I mean, who knows what's going to happen with comedy with COVID, but,
yeah.
you know, hopefully I'll still have a career.
Right. Yeah, know? Me too, brother.
Yeah,
I'll tell you what. So I challenge them to catch a live performance, but until the world gets back to normal, you have CDs on there that are amazing pieces of work, in my opinion.
Thank you.
And please check out his podcast, because when it comes around to its next batch of episodes – hopefully I'll be on one of them, but also,
yeah, we're doing that. That would be great.
They're just so fucking interesting, man. And funny. I mean, it's different, and that's everything about Stuart is different, and it's awesome. So get to know him if you don't already, and consume him as much as possible. All right, brother. Well,
thanks so much
again. Come by anytime you come through Indianapolis. Let's just sit down and shoot the shit again.
Yeah, man. I love it.
Yeah. We'll just make a regular thing out of it, and I'll get your way.
Yes, let's do it.
All right, brother.
We'll try.
Thanks.